This is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Claire Roth. It's All Things Considered. Hanif Abdurraqib is a Columbus-based poet and essayist. His collection of essays, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, was published in November of last year by the Columbus-based press, $2 Radio. It ended up on a slew of best-of lists, including NPR's, and now he's announced a two-book deal with Random House. He joins me now in studio to discuss the books. Thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me, Claire.
Your first book is a poetry collection. It's called The Crown Ain't Worth Much. It's set in Columbus. It focuses on the experience of being young and black in America. Your second book, They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, often examines the intersection of race and music and the Midwest. How does the sense of place, specifically this place, this city, influence your writing?
I think that early on in my writing career, if it can be called a career, I got very invested in the idea of telling the story that I wanted to see in the world. And I grew up in the 90s with a lot of coastal narratives, with a lot of especially narratives around young black people. There were a lot of narratives coming out of the West Coast and out of the East Coast in film, in literature, particularly in music. And I wanted to kind of build a world where those stories were at a premium here in the Midwest, and particularly in Columbus.
You write that Columbus, quote, overflows with talented people who don't always know where to place their talent. What is it like making art here?
I mean, I love it, but I also, you know, and I wrote that, and I hope it's not like a slight. I think Columbus this is the city where I learned to write. I learned to write and read poetry out loud. I think that there is a wealth of talent here, and there are a wealth of gifted people here. And because there are a lot of resources and spaces for those people, there could be more, particularly for marginalized communities. But I think because there are places to do an art show, and there are places to do a poetry reading, and there are places to play music, you know, I think a lot of people become jack of all trades in a sense. A thing that I really love and don't love about Columbus is how rapidly it changes, right? And a big part of what drives me and what inspires me is to archive the city as it is before it shifts. And there's also something to be said about the comfort of knowing your architecture and the comfort of knowing where you can go to see people you love. And there's comfort in, you know, being able to go to a supermarket and know where everything is. You know, I think there's a real value in that. For me, as someone who's often anxious and whose mind is always running at a million miles an hour, to know exactly where I am and be grounded in that is really comfortable.
In one of the essays in They Can't Kill Us, you describe growing up in a poor neighborhood in very close proximity to the suburbs. How have you seen this city evolve over time?
Yeah, my first book was The Crown Ain't Worth Much was about gentrification in Columbus, and I think that what I'm seeing that that kind of bums me out a bit is that there are spaces that aren't really sacred anymore. You know, geography's not sacred, and so what happens is people lose landmarks and people lose things that matter to them. And on a larger scale, people lose access to things. Neighborhoods lose grocery stores, and that has generational impact. You know, that ripples through generations. That's not just, you know, I think when we think about gentrification, we often think about one building being replaced with another thing. But there are generational impacts to the people who are pushed to the margins or the people who lose resources in their neighborhood that were keeping them alive. You know, people who are pushed out of the neighborhoods and forced to move off of a bus line, and that bus line was the way they got to work. And this isn't to say that cities all change for the bad. I think there are thrilling and exciting things happening in Columbus. But I would like to consider when those thrilling and exciting things happen at the cost of some other neighborhood or some other group of people.
A lot of They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us examines the horrors and the struggles of 2016, but your last essay is titled Surviving on Small Joys. You talk about that kind of tension between happiness and work. In 2018, what should art aim to do? What should your art, what do you want it to do?
What I want my art to aim to do? I think that, you know, at least for me, I want to write, I'm going to speak for myself in what I want my writing to do internally, and then hopefully it'll echo throughout a world beyond myself. But I want to write a book or some books or just some things that feel fun or that make me, that bring me joy. And it doesn't matter to me if people see it or not, you know, I which isn't to say that I, you know, They Can't Kill Us was written during a really hard time. You know, I kind of isolated in Provincetown, Massachusetts during the winter of 2016 and wrote the bulk of it. And I was thrilled to get it done, but it didn't bring me joy. And The Crown Ain't Worth Much was a very heavy, difficult book. And I don't think that writing should be agony, right? I don't think it should be. Artists sometimes like to make a great deal out of suffering for their art, and I don't believe that's how it should be. It certainly can be that way, as I've experienced. But I want to write something that brings me joy, or something that interests me, or something that engages me in a way that feels fun and exciting. And even if people don't ever see it, that's fine. You know, surely people will see some of it, obviously. But if people don't see all of it, that's okay. And I hope that. I'm interested in writing work that contextualizes a moment, but also fleshes out all sides of that moment, right? If I'm writing about race, I hope to write about people as along the full spectrum of their humanity, so black people in a way where there's not just grief or trauma or sadness, right? I'm really trying to stretch out the happy moments in my work a little more.
On that note, what are you writing next?
I'm working on a next poetry collection, which hopefully will be out by 2019. And then in 2020, I'll have my first book out with Random House. And it's a book called They Don't Dance No More. And it's about a history of black performance in the United States that begins with minstrel shows and kind of draws a lineage through through all modes of performance. Like, for example, I'm writing a piece right now on Bernie Mac and Mike Tyson and kind of seeing the intersections there. And I'm writing a piece on old minstrel dancers and Allen Iverson. And trying to do what I was talking about as far as honing in on some of the joys that come with black performance, even though some of it, particularly the minstrel work, was rooted in, you know, oppressive structures. I've done a lot of research on how there are ways in which that work was fulfilling for the performers. And so I'm thinking a lot about how black performance can be a fulfilling tool, even when, you know, history deems it as kind of demeaning.
Hanif Abdul-Raqib, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.